All right, welcome everyone. My name is Roseanne Ibarra. I am the Director of Community and for Adventist Health Ukiah Valley, Howard Memorial, and Mendocino Coast Hospitals. I'm here today as co-founder of Mendocino Latinx Alliance, or MLA. I see here we have 74 attendees and also our 9 panelists that you see here on the screen. That's fantastic. Welcome. This webinar today will be bilingual. This is a huge milestone for us. It is the first time that we are presenting virtually and the first time that we are doing simultaneous interpretation. It's my pleasure to welcome Ricardo Ibarra, Executive Director of WATSA Creative Lab. Mr. Ibarra will be our Spanish interpreter today. He was a journalist for 20 years, writing and editing for publications such as El Informador, Público, La Gaceta de la Universidad de Guadalajara, and the news agency EFE. More recently, he worked as founding editor of La Prensa Sonoma from 2015 to 2020. To listen to this presentation in Spanish, at the bottom of your screen, click on interpretation. That's going to be on that bottom bar on the far right. So look for the icon globe. Select your language of preference. If you choose Spanish, you will hear Mr. Ibarra and the original audio at a lower volume. You can also select mute original audio to only hear the interpreted language. Please select your preferred language now. In the chat, please let us know if you need assistance. Now I will be speaking in Spanish for those of you joining us. Bienvenido. Mi nombre es Rosana Ibarra. Soy la.
Welcome. My name is Rosanne Ibarra. My role is with the hospitals of Ukiah Valley, Memorial Valley, and Willits, Fort Bragg. Today I'm here as co-founder of the Alliance Mendocino Latinx, born in LA. This webinar, bilingual, is a great step for an alliance. It's the first time that we present a virtual interpretation simultaneously. It's my pleasure to welcome Mr. Ibarra, Executive Director of WATSA Lab, who is going to be our interpreter in Spanish. He was a journalist for 20 years, writing and edited for publications like El Informador, Público, La Gaceta de la Universidad de Guadalajara, and the news agency EFE. Recently, he worked as the founder and editor of La Prensa Sonoma from 2015 to 2020. To listen to this presentation in Spanish and below the screen, press interpretation. Look for the icon of the globe. Select your preferred language. If you select Spanish, you will listen to Mr. Ibarra, and the original audio is going to be lower. You can also select silence original audio to only listen to the interpretation. Please select your preferred language now. In the chat, let us know if you need help.
I'll give everyone a moment to select your channel. We are using the Zoom webinar today, so all of our attendees are muted. To ask questions, please use the chat feature. You can find the chat icon at the bottom of your screen. Thank you to Community Foundation for your sponsorship and for sharing your Zoom platform with MLA for today's webinar. We also thank our additional sponsors, Sonoma Clean Power and Mendocino College. Today's webinar could not be possible without the help of MLA Steering Committee member Jose Cardenas Ortiz. He is a loan officer for Savings Bank of Mendocino County. Thank you, Jose, for your tremendous support researching how to do the interpretation piece here on Zoom. Thank you as well to Steering Committee members Miguel Barbara Allende, CEO of Community Foundation, Mendocino County, Angelica Millan, Managing Attorney for Legal Services of Northern California, Ukiah Office, Regional Office, and Erica Nunez-Reyes, Supervised Visitation Coordinator for Mendocino County Youth Project. These ladies will be monitoring our English and Spanish chat today. And thank you as well to Healthy Mendocino and Molly Rosenthal, Coast Coordinator, for the technical support you're providing in the background, and also for helping with monitoring the chat. Today's webinar will be recorded and streamed on our Facebook so that it can be accessed later by the public. MLA is very pleased to share with you that on Tuesday, the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved to move forward on requests that Latinx leaders from across the county presented to create Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Task Force and to make more information available in Spanish. These eight groups of leaders included Ucaya Vecinos en Acción, La Coalición Latina de la Costa de Mendocino, South Coast Latino Coalition, Nuestra Alianza de Willits, Sueño Latino en Anderson Valley, Periódico Al Punto, Mendo Latino, and Mendocino Latinx Alliance. During the presentation, we heard powerful accounts from community members who illustrated the complexity of the Latinx experience and our challenges. One speaker shared what it was like to have her social bubble test positive for COVID-19. Another speaker shared frustration at the lack of information available in Spanish and the lack of response from agencies when calls are made. She went on to say, Latinos are not getting services because they don't know they exist. The joint Latinx leaders thank Mendocino County Board of Supervisors for their support and leadership in moving toward more inclusivity. Their action on Tuesday marks a historic moment for those of us impacted by disparities. Also, thank you to Chair Hashcheck, Dr. Duhan, and Health and Human Services Agency Director Tammy Moss Chandler for making the workshop possible. I now would like to welcome forward Supervisor John Hashcheck from our third district, who's also chair of the board. Supervisor Hashcheck.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It's great to see people that we got together on Tuesday. I did this in Spanish, but I guess you want me to do it in English. So I'd like to thank everyone for being here today, and especially the leaders who helped make this possible. Thank you, Roseanne Ibarra, for your incredible work and your team, you know, because it is a team effort to get this all together. We did have a great presentation on Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors. It was 2 hours just discussing issues in the Latinx community and how we can make those better, how we can make our communities safer, healthier, and more inclusive. And so there were certainly great panelists, which are here today, Dr. Aguilar Gaciola. Thank you for being here again. We really appreciate your efforts in on behalf of our community. And you know, like Roseanne talked about the important move that the board did on Tuesday of, you know, accepting the recommendations from the Latinx community and the panel to move our county in a more inclusive, healthier, diverse way. And if we, you know, the health and safety of our community for everyone is so important. So I just like to say thank you again. And, you know, there's not enough time to go into everything, but the hope is that we can create a community that's safer and healthier for everyone with respect and dignity, and that everyone feels that they're a part of our community and that we're pulling together, and that obviously in this pandemic, we're all in it together and there's no one can be left behind. So anyway, thank you. And I hope we have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Hashcheck. Our program today includes the following speakers: Dr. Noemi Duhan, Mendocino Public Health Officer; Dr. Besant Parker, Medical Officer for Adventist Health Ucaya Valley, Howard Memorial, and Mendocino Coast Hospitals; George Verestigi, Mendocino County Public Health Senior Program Manager of WIC and International Medical Graduate. Mr. Verestigi is also a member of the Mendocino Latinx Alliance Steering Committee; and Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola, Founding Director of the UC Davis Center for Reducing Health Disparities. Thank you, Dr. Aguilar Gaxiola, for your presentation on Tuesday to our Board of Supervisors, where you shared COVID-19 data and recommendations on how to prevent further infection and possible future deaths among Latinos in our county. I now invite Dr. Duhan. I don't see her here on the screen, and I did receive a message that she may possibly have some challenges getting connected. Dr. Duhan, are you on? Okay, I'm not hearing Dr. Duhan. We'll work on that in the background. I'd like to invite forward Dr. Parker from Adventist Health.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here on behalf of Adventist Health Mendocino County. It is certainly a difficult time for the nation, as well as for us in Mendocino County dealing with COVID-19. It is especially so unfortunate that it has tended to impact our brothers and sisters in the Latinx community much more than other communities in this county. We at Adventist Health are open arms to all to take care of patients who have COVID and patients who do not have COVID. Over the past several weeks, we've had the unfortunate opportunity to take care of some COVID patients. We have done that to the best of our ability. We did here in Mendocino County, I did have the opportunity to prepare a bit more than perhaps other cities and counties where they had a sudden influx of COVID cases. Not influx, but a sudden rise of COVID cases to the extent that it was difficult to control. We have been able to prepare before this increase in cases that we're seeing currently. I wanted to share a few things that are specific to the Latinx community, what we are doing that would be helpful to them. So as with most hospitals, we do have interpreter services and certainly do have Spanish interpreters, live interpreters in our hospitals for the most part. And we also have video and online interpreter services in all our three hospitals. We do also have signage in both English and Spanish so that people who are Spanish speaking would not be left out with regards to directions directives when they have gotten care from us. Is there more we can do? I think we all are thinking about that now making sure that we leave no stone unturned in being able to help our brothers and sisters in the Latinx community. I thought it would be helpful to share a few details. So in Howard, we have 15 certified interpreters. In Ukiah, we have over 60, we do have a couple on the coast. We try to, in our emergency areas, such as OB and the ED, emergency department, we try to staff bilingual staff for most of the various shifts that we have. If we do not have live staff that are bilingual, certainly do have the online video and phone interpretation services. I want to speak about a few other things with regards to testing how the Latinx community can protect from the spread of COVID. As we all know, we have been mandated to have facial covering, not to gather, just to help decrease the spread and to socially distance. It is important that we do that. Masking is critical. In our facilities, we do not allow anyone coming in to not have a mask. You have to be masked. So to keep that in mind. Our doors are open to take care of everyone. No one should have any fear or any doubt that if they were to come to us, be it in the clinics or in the emergency room or any other department of the hospital, they will not be cared for either because they do not have money or for any other reason. We will care for people. I think you worry about the money later on. What's important is life, and that comes first. Our mission is to serve the community, and that's what we want to continue to do. I want to speak a little bit about testing. We are doing the best with testing. We do have tests, but it is not unlimited. Nationwide testing is a challenge. So we are prioritizing what we do with our in-house testing. For patients who are going to be hospitalized, we do test them. Individuals who are symptomatic and are at risk of getting poor outcomes. So these may be elderly folks with diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, kidney disease, hypertension, or may have any condition that makes them immunocompromised. We prioritize those individuals and test them. Healthcare personnel who have symptoms or first responders, we prioritize those as well to test. And because these are people who need to be available for all of us if and when we are sick. And, you know, we could be sick from other other sicknesses and not COVID. And so we need them to be available. So they are a priority. And then, of course, persons that are requested by public health to be tested also get tested. Some patients who are having surgery may undergo certain procedures that produce a lot of droplets. And so we try to test them and make sure that they do not have COVID before surgery is done. And if they do have COVID, it does not preclude surgery being done. It just helps us to know so we prepare appropriately to take care of such people. So I think I will end by saying the hospital, the clinics are open arms to take care of everyone, COVID or non-COVID. No one should be afraid that when they come to us, you know, because we may have COVID patients in-house, that means that they're going to get the disease. We have properly trained folks who have been equipped with appropriate PPE, and we have ramped up new protocols to assure that infection prevention is top of the list. And so we are taking care of other non-COVID patients. We're doing surgery on non-COVID patients, and people are doing well. So one thing that we have seen is the acuity, the severity of illness of those coming to the emergency room has gone up. And it appears that people are staying home too long with diseases before they come to the emergency room. So I would ask that you do not stay at home with any disease you have. Call your doctor, come to the emergency room if need be, and we are open arms to help you. Thank you. I'll pause at this point, and if I don't know when there will be question time, but I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Yes, are there any questions in the chat? So Angelica, Erica, Molly, do you see any questions coming forward for Dr. Parker? I do want to say I did see the message that on the Spanish channel that the interpreter, some individuals are having trouble hearing. Ricardo, if you're able to speak a little bit more loudly. Thank you. All right, any questions for Dr. Parker?
I do not see any questions so far.
I do not see any questions.
And then please know to enter your questions into chat, and we will, after each speaker, be accepting questions, and then as well at the end of the speaking portion. Dr. Doohan, welcome. I invite you forward to speak. Are you able to pull up your presentation?
I hope so. I apologize. I was here the whole time, but you couldn't see me or hear me, but I'm glad you can now.
Yes.
We at the county did prepare a PowerPoint presentation in Spanish and in English. And Rosanna would be very happy to send you the Spanish language version. Maybe you already have it, but I'm going to put the English language version up on my screen, and hopefully
you can. It's ready. Yeah, just share your screen.
Okay, I'm trying. Let's see.
There you go.
Okay, there you see it. Okay, so let's see how I can go to the next slide. There we go. So we did want to present for you today the number of cases as of today in Mendocino County. As of this morning, we had 234 cases in Mendocino County, with 132 of those being from the Latinx population. So that's how, based on how people self-identify. So in sometimes when you look on our data tracker, you'll see unknown ethnicity. That's because the person did not identify themselves with one ethnicity or race. So that's 56%. And as we know, this is a disproportionate number for our population. You can see here also from the slide, the number of people that are in active isolation, meaning they're new cases, brand new cases. We have 105 brand new cases. This would be within 10 days of their test date. And more than half of those are from the Latinx population, so 64%. So this is telling us that we have an increasing number of people from the Latinx population testing positive. Regarding our data from, this is actually, I believe, from yesterday, maybe, or this morning, perhaps, five total in the hospital, with two being Latinx. And in the ICU, one
of that. This is Roseanne. I'm wondering if you could put the presentation into slideshow mode. That's a question from the public, just so that it shows up larger on the screen. At the very bottom. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm sorry. It was six cases total in the hospital. One of them is in the intensive care unit. And the individual in the intensive care unit is Latinx from this data. And we did have had four deaths in our county, one most recently within this week from the Latinx community. So this does bring home the point that we need to further care for our Latinx population in the prevention of getting COVID in the first place. So we do provide isolation and quarantine housing in the county, and we did want to share that this is free housing for people that cannot isolate in their own homes or quarantine in their own homes because of the living situation that they have, or maybe they don't have a home. So in that case, we've had 29 people that we've provided isolation and quarantine housing to, a total of 242 nights of free housing, and of that population, seven of the people we're from the Latinx population. Every time that we have a new case in Mendocino County, we ask that person, do you need isolation housing? Are you able to isolate in your own home? Do you have your own bathroom where you can have a separate place to bathe? Because we know that it's, you know, COVID is quite infectious, stays on surfaces. And if that person says, I don't have a place to safely isolate at home, that's when we provide this housing. So we have been doing outbreak and surveillance testing, and this has been a way that we have wanted to be of service to every person in our county. We've had 19 outbreak testing events, which is where we identify an outbreak, which would be three or more cases in one place. And then we stand up very rapidly outbreak testing, which we send to the public health lab in Sonoma and now at the Richmond lab, which is the state lab in Richmond, California. We've done 137 surveillance testing events. These are all done with our partner clinics, which are around our county and are really on the front line of our care for our Latinx population. Our community clinics are absolutely on the front line. And we also have the OptumServe resource that also provides surveillance testing. We also just secured a rapid point of care testing machine for the Mendocino Coast Clinic in Fort Bragg, which is being delivered today. And this is another way that we've supported our Latinx community because of course the FQHC clinics like MCC on the coast does serve so beautifully our Latinx population. We've had weekly calls with our clinic partners so that we may, for months now, so that we make sure that we are supporting our clinics who are supporting our Latinx populations. We've established a walk-in lane for those who wish to be tested at OptumServe, and that was particularly focused on our Latinx population who we got feedback were having a hard time with the sign-in online. And that was, again, because there was much focus on the English language. We also have been doing free testing through UCSF, that's the surveillance testing, and partnering with other public health labs for our outbreak testing.
Dr. Duna, I apologize for interrupting, but I see a question here from the audience. If you could define surveillance testing.
Sure, of course. Surveillance testing is meant to be for people that are not symptomatic, they're not sick, and they haven't had any close contact with somebody who is a COVID case. But so it should be someone that really doesn't think they have COVID, but they want to be tested just to make sure. But we do have people who have come to our surveillance testing sites, which is OptumServe, and also the surveillance testing our clinics have done, who have been sick or who have been a close contact. That is not what we're wanting for the surveillance testing, but when people do come, we recognize it's a reality. So because of that, if someone does come when they're sick, we're going to be giving them instructions about reaching out for care from their primary care or to the hospital if they're sicker. But we also give them orders if they're having symptoms that they must stay home and isolate while we await those results. Or if they're a close contact, they must quarantine. I hope that answers the question. So the OptumServe resource is a testing site in Ukiah. So we've had a number of media initiatives, and these have been, again, we do recognize focused in English language, but I did want to talk about those things that we've done that have been focusing on the Latinx community. Clearly, it's not enough, but we have been trying. And so we've provided a dashboard on our website in Spanish. We've been having George, who's on this call, providing translation, interpretation during our Friday media updates for a segment of that. We have done some shows on KZYX for the Spanish language programming. We've also translated the health orders and educational materials into Spanish on our website. And we've been doing contact tracing and OptumServe testing PSAs in Spanish. But we also are working on this list on the bottom here to develop a county web page dedicated to providing COVID-19 resources in Spanish. There are Spanish resources, there are Spanish language resources on our website, but they're not all in one place. You have to read through a lot of material to find them. So what we're going to do is make a location on that website where all of the Spanish language materials are all in one place. We are going to be doing a focus on our COVID-19 video updates in Spanish on Fridays starting today. We're going to be also additionally using professional translation and interpretation services that came out of the excellent workshop we had on Tuesday. We heard this call and are moving on it rapidly to get professional interpretation and translation. We want to also develop more educational materials and social media posts in Spanish and additional educational videos. And importantly, we need the partnerships with the community so that we can make sure our Latinx community is getting from their Latinx leadership these materials. We need the help of our Latinx leaders to make sure these materials we develop are shared. So we do have next steps. We have case investigators and contact tracers who help with our outbreak follow-up, and we do need volunteers who are bilingual. We need help with distributing the educational infographics and flyers. We need to, we really need help from our Latinx leadership to get the message out to our community that we should not be having gatherings. I know this is very, very difficult, but when people come together for celebrations, this is where we're seeing a lot of spreading. When people come together for celebrations that are a normal part of our life, gatherings for birthday parties, for quinceañeras, for variety of very, very treasured social and cultural and worship events, it is how we're spreading the virus if we're not social distancing and wearing facial coverings. The governor has banned all gatherings at this time except for worship. We also, as I said, hiring a full-time translator, community partners to be our trusted advocates and ambassadors to the community. And then we're increasing our partnerships with our local clinics for case investigations and contact tracings. And the very first clinic that we solidified this partnership with was the Round Valley and Indian Health Center, with the outbreaks that we've been dealing with up in Round Valley in the Covelo area. So we work with our clinics, we meet weekly with them, and this is an area of increasing work together with our clinic partners. And I wanna share here some of the infographics and flyers that you can find on our website that we have been developing over time that live on our website, but we need more. We need to make sure that there are readily available flyers that people can put up in their stores and their homes or their churches, wherever they are, to remind us that we need to stay 6 feet apart. We need to wear facial coverings at all time in the public, unless for some reason we're disabled and we can't, or we're under the age of two. We need to stay home when we're sick. We need to, to the extent possible, wash our hands. We need these messages to be spread throughout our county, because what we're seeing when we see outbreaks is people not wearing facial coverings, not staying 6 feet apart, not staying home when they're sick, and spreading the disease, in particular in gatherings. And on the next slide, these are the listings on our website of where we have the Spanish language documentation, including our sheltering in place orders, all of the orders, and these flyers that I showed you on the last slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Doohan. Thank you for this important information and for sharing the update on the progress that the county is making. We really do appreciate all of these efforts. And now if we have any questions for Dr. Doohan.
I don't see any questions yet.
I have one question. Are there community business organizations that assist with the local clinics and testing information messaging?
Community business organizations. We do have the West Company that's been working with our business community to help with implementation of the orders, the sheltering in place orders. But is this question regarding testing? Did I hear that it was regarding testing?
It's unclear. It's just with testing information and messaging. So I think it's wondering if there are community businesses that are sort of engaging with the Latino population to share out that information. Do you have any specifics, not West, but more like local businesses?
Our messaging for our testing that we've done, which is surveillance testing, because the public health department is not providing medical care to people. We're working to prevent and mitigate slow, in other words, slow the spread of COVID. So our testing, which has been focusing on surveillance testing and outbreak testing, the messaging for that has come through our community clinic partners primarily, and through our public health department, through the public service announcements we make, the press releases we do, our Friday press conferences. But in particular, we have not had the business community partnering with us on that. But I will say that as we move forward into this pandemic, the state has indicated that they will not necessarily be continuing to fund testing indefinitely, and that we are going to have to find ways to fund testing locally, including perhaps from the business community. So this is an area for the future.
Dr. Doohan, there's a question about monolingual Spanish speakers and if that information can be added to the county's dashboard.
How many of our cases are monolingual Spanish speakers and that would be added to our dashboard? If you thought that would be helpful, I mean, one of the things that we've been concerned about is stigmatization. of our populations. And that's one of the reasons why we don't list all ethnicities on our dashboard, because there are some ethnicities that are, if we said, you know, an area of the county that's more of a remote area and we identified ethnicity, we might actually identify the individual, which we never want to do. We want to protect personal privacy, and we don't want to stigmatize. I would say I would look to this leadership, the Latinx leadership group, to give us advice on whether you think that would be something to publicly put out. But I will tell you that from our experience with the case investigation contact tracing we're doing, we're seeing quite a large percentage of our new cases being from the monolingual Spanish-speaking community.
Thank you. There's another question regarding masks and if the county can provide masks to frontline workers to make sure that they have the proper protective gear.
So we have a MOOC, which is our Medical Health or Operations Area Coordination System, by which we distribute through the county medical resources. So for organizations that have frontline workers that are medical, certainly we do supply masks if that organization can't get them. If it's a business, the business does need to supply masks to their workers. And that's not generally something that the county is supplying. So I would have to know what frontline workers means. But generally it is on the responsibility of businesses to supply their own workers with masks.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Doohan. I see a question here that's for Dr. Parker. Can the hospital folks address the question of what information they send to HHS? Since HHS oversees some immigration programs, folks may want to learn more about whether any personal information might be shared.
Thank you. So personal information is not shared. What HHS is looking to be able to do with the information is basically to help with allocation of resources. What we send is more aggregate data. So how many COVID patients have we seen in our hospitals? What's the background? Is it Black? Is it Latino? Is it Caucasian? And so on. So the general health data that does not include personal information. So I don't think anyone should be concerned that when they come to hospital to be cared for, should they be undocumented or what have you, that would be a problem. That certainly is not the purpose of the data that we share.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. And now I invite forward Mr. Verastigi. MLA has asked Mr. Verastigi to speak in Spanish to illustrate what it is like to have important information interpreted. Mr. Ibarra, our interpreter, will switch to the main channel here to interpret Mr. Verastigi's statements. Mr. Ibarra, if you can please inform those listening in on the Spanish channel that the next portion will be in Spanish.
We are ready. Hello. Hello. I am ready to translate.
¿Ya puedo empezar?
Sí, adelante.
Okay, yo estaba esperando. Okay, gracias por la invitación.
Thank you for the invitation. For those that don't know me, I am a doctor graduate in Peru.
Tengo maestría en
I have a master's in political health in Peru, a master's in business in Spain, Madrid. And I'm studying public health in the University of
Spain.
Actually, I'm a manager of programs in the nutrition program for kids and women that are pregnant or that are breastfeeding.
For those of you, for the English speakers, if you go down to your interpretation, if you're on the off, you're going to hear George in Spanish. If you're wanting to hear Mr. Ibarra, select the English channel. Thank you. Adelante.
Ok, gracias. Bueno, entonces.
Okay, thank you.
Básicamente, mi rol aquí.
Basically, my role here started. Well, my role as to educate the Hispanic community outside of WIC started with the pandemic, trying to get the information to the Hispanic community. Initially, I think the county did a good approach because the number of cases was low. The way we delivered the information to the community, the best way. But the cases began to rise, and we just don't needed someone that to deliver this information firsthand, but we needed people that the case investigations and the tracing. And now we're feeling the need. Unfortunately, Dr. Duhan has mentioned we're going to have the possibility to with a little army of bilingual staff that are going to help us because we're very short of staff. A lot of times we have to be here weekends trying to do our work, doing the case investigations or the tracing of cases. This is working every day is very challenging and exhausting. I want to mention that I've been reflecting about this pandemic. Dr. Sergio is going to deliver these ideas better, but I do want to mention from my point of view as a Hispanic worker in the front line and trying to educate our community here in Mendocino. I don't want to miss the opportunity to express how I see this, the situation in the country and in general, what's happening around the world. I think this pandemic is the pandemic of injustice. The coronavirus, what has done has expressed, exposed injustices that already been said. Have already existed. It's not that the coronavirus brought the injustice. The injustice was there, and it's impacting hard the communities that have been neglected. In April of 2020, 36 million people have lost their jobs. 40% had an annual salary of 40,000, and 40% of the people that applied to unemployment are white, 17% Afro-American, 19% Latinos. Let's remember that only people can apply to non-employment people with documents. This number of 19% being the biggest till April 2020. This can be lower, so the people from the Latino community that have lost their jobs in the pandemic can be almost 40% in all the country if we count those that are undocumented. It's not casual that all these expressions happen in Minneapolis with the assassination of George Floyd. It's not casual that the people are expressing their discontent because this injustice has been happening for decades. It's not. If we see a function, we can say that a person died from COVID-19. We, as medics, that a of that certificate of poverty, there's a chronic sickness, there's a lack of access to health care, and there's racial injustice by people that haven't been into a clinic in the right time. So, with a logo, COVID-19, but doing this to mask, we try to go a bit more deep with this dysfunction diagnostic. We are going to see deep. So what can we do? This meeting Tuesday, it was a big step. The Board of Supervisors have given us the opportunity to express our voice, and that we can collectively, and they've been receptive to get all these preoccupations, but we're just a part of the society. There are some other important actors in society, in the county. For example, we have to see the way that we can better the access to health care of the people that don't have access to health care. We have to figure a way that we can guarantee the access. Second, we have to see the possibility to divert the workforce and the health department and medic and nurse. We see, for example, the doctors that are working in the hospital or in the health system here, the Latinos are minimum. And if we further, future medics that are coming out of universities, there's not one Latino coming out of those programs. So we have to make sensitive some other institutions that are involved in the healthcare system so we can change, contribute to this fight of these injustices that we are all watching. This kind of power to incorporate the minority groups as done by the Board of Supervisors, I think it's a big step. And finally, I think that we need to have a strategy, a whole strategy that we can get in the next year. How can we try to identify and solve the issues that are linked to the socially determinants of the health of the public, you know, and try to implement policies of equity and equality in the county, in the terms that to give more resources to who more needs them. Some of my thoughts that I wanted to share with the panel, and I'm open to questions. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions? I don't see questions now. Okay, thank you. For those that are listening in Spanish,
okay, we're going to transition now to the English section portion of the program. It's I now invite forward Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola. He is professor of clinical internal medicine for the School of Medicine at UC Davis. He is director of the community engagement program of the UC Davis Clinical Translational Science Center. He is past chair of the Board of National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI of California. He was recently appointed to a 4-year term as member of the National Advisory Council of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA, Center for Mental Health Services. He is currently a member of the California Healthcare Foundation and a member of the California Department of Public Health Equity Advisory Committee. He is a national and international expert on health and mental health comorbidities on diverse populations. He has held several World Health Organization and Pan American Health Organization advisory board and consulting appointments, and is currently a member of the executive committee of the World Health Organization World Mental Health Survey Consortium, and is coordinator for Latin America, overseeing population-based national regional surveys in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, and Peru. Dr. Aguilar Gaxiola is the author of over 180 scientific publications, among many other accomplishments. It is my distinct honor to welcome forward Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola.
Thank you so much, Roxanne, for that kind of introduction. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Y agradezco muchísimo la invitación. Yo soy mexicano, soy inmigrante también, de un pueblo del estado de Sinaloa, y me da mucho gusto tener la oportunidad de hablar con ustedes también y intercambiar ideas. Y estoy muy impresionado positivamente por el trabajo que está haciendo la comunidad en el condado de Mendocino y también la receptividad, pues, de las autoridades, ¿no? De los board supervisors, de la doctora Duhan. Estoy impresionado. Y me da mucho gusto de nuevo. Voy a regresar en inglés porque me dijeron que hablara en inglés. What I'm hoping to do is to share with you some thoughts at the national level, at the state level here in California, and at the local level. And what a difference sometimes a few weeks make. You know, and what I'm showing you there is kind of a curve of what has been occurring here in the U.S. When the very first few cases were reported, and then it took off, as you can see on that curve, and then it leveled off, and actually it was coming down. And then all of a sudden, boom, had a significant uptick. And that happened, you know, what I'm showing you there, just at the beginning of this month. So this is what is happening, you know, as of July 5th. And I'm going to be highlighting the dates. So you keep in mind, once again, how important the dates are, because this is a matter of timing. It's a matter of, you know, getting in there and trying to predict and to be proactive as much as possible. You know, this particular graph that I'm showing, it comes from the New York Times, and that had an impact. That particular article had an impact. And what it captures there is that Latino and African American residents are three times more likely or as likely to become infected by the coronavirus as white residents, and nearly twice as likely to die. Once again, this is at the national level. This is July 5th. And something that el doctor Verastagui mencionó, and I cannot agree more with him, is that this phenomenon that we are seeing, unprecedented numbers, unprecedented impact on all of us, all the population, is that this pointed to the pervasive social and structural inequities that are disproportionately burdening racial and ethnic minority groups. And this is with the coronavirus worst effects. So what the pandemic has done is to really shed us a light, a shining light on what existed before. Now, what we knew that has existed for decades, actually centuries, It is more pronounced than ever, I think. But one thing that is important to keep in mind is that because of that, there is a unique opportunity to also make changes, you know, radical structural changes. We have that opportunity. And when I'm going to speak a little bit more about that point. This is yesterday. Yeah, U.S. coronavirus tops 1,100 for a third day in a row. This is in California back in the 5th of this month. And as you can see there, you know, the Latinos are being affected in terms of the number of cases, number of deaths, and with the disproportionate numbers to the distribution of Latinos as in California. Same thing is happening with African Americans, you know. But that is July 5th, okay? And this is what's happening lately here in California. From COVID-19, you know, California passes 400,000 cases. Actually, this is the number as of 2 days ago, 413,576. This is moving fast, you know, really. And I want to instill in all of us a sense of urgency because it's urgent. The other thing is, this is 2 days ago. California has most COVID-19 cases in the U.S., surpassing New York. And now we know that L.A. has surpassed New York City in terms of the number of cases and deaths. You know, and you may remember the horror that many of us were observing. What, a few weeks ago in New York, of those trailers with freezers, basically to store the bodies that they couldn't process soon enough, the funeral homes. Okay, so here I'm going to present very quickly an evolving view of. What was happening in California, and this is based on the Department of Public Health data, what was happening on April 26th, and then kind of a snapshot of what was happening yesterday. So it is a little bit more than almost 3 months ago, okay? So what we were seeing in California back in April 26, and by the way, that was the week that the state, through the Department of Public Health, they started to post this data, you know, the distribution of number of cases and number of deaths by race and ethnicity and by age groups as well, which is wonderful that they did that. I applaud those efforts. I think that we have learned a lot because of that. But look at the numbers then. You know, still, relative to the proportion of Latinos in the state, there were fewer deaths, okay? With African Americans was a different story, because with African Americans, there were disproportionately more number of deaths, you know, with respect to the proportion in the population. This is what's happening as of 2 days ago. Do you see the difference? You know, the increase when you consider all the ages aggregated, the difference and the inequities once again when you consider all the ages. And this is what's happening with African Americans. It got a little bit better than the previous disproportions that I told you about. This is, if we consider the age group from 18 to 49 back in April 26, this is what we were seeing. we were already seeing a disproportion of deaths in Latinos in relationship to this particular age group in the population, okay? This is what we were seeing with African Americans. Three times the numbers of deaths in African Americans, tremendous disproportion. It was actually alarming. I got an interview from the LA Times who broke the story, and it made the waves across the nation, trying to figure out why Blacks and Latinos were dying younger than the rest of the population. So this is as of 2 days ago, and these are ages 35 to 49. And look at these numbers. Did you know that out of 5 people who die in California, 4 are Latinos, basically? And these are the numbers for African Americans. Actually, there is no disproportion with African Americans related to the percentage in the population. And of course, the questions are why? What's happening with our communities of Latinos that you can see these dramatic numbers, significant numbers? This is back in April, once again, ages 50 to 64. These are the numbers, already a disproportion. Same thing with African Americans. This is 3 days ago. You have double the deaths in Latinos of age group, and you have there is a disproportion with African Americans, but not that much, okay? One thing that I want to emphasize here is that there is a significant proportion of cases, both cases and deaths, that are, they don't have identified race and ethnicity. They don't, it is about 30%. And I happen to believe that a good proportion of those are Latinos, okay? And many of them, I think, and we have discussed this with many colleagues, that maybe farm workers, maybe immigrants, maybe undocumented immigrants. So we need to consider these numbers because the situation may be even worse than the one that I'm presenting to you, okay? So a couple of weeks, there was this report from in the Sacramento Bee, a special report. Really, this was the front page in the Sacramento Bee about as cases surge, California struggles to slow COVID-19 in Latino communities. And I'm emphasizing there the quote that as California scrambles to respond, there is the question of whether officials should have noticed the surge in cases among Latinos sooner and acted more assertively. But there's a more pressing issue now. That's a more pressing issue now. And so all of you, and all of us, in my opinion, are doing the right thing. I cannot tell you how heartening has been for me, Roseanne and all of the colleagues, the chair of the Board of Supervisors, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on your last name, but you are doing the right thing. You are being proactive. And that's an incredible advantage, as I will emphasize a bit later. These are your numbers as of yesterday. You have a wonderful dashboard. I have been bragging about you, by the way, because it's just terrific to see these numbers. To see the dashboard, also the numbers, because what you have is 234 cases as of yesterday, and Dr. Duhan did a fantastic job, presenting in much more detail what I'm presenting to you right now. So she already covered that much better than I can. But what I want to emphasize is that, 59% of the cases are in Latinos as of yesterday, okay? And you are blessed to only have 4 fatalities. I'm sure that you are following other counties, and boy, I'm very moved to see the number of fatalities in counties that are of similar size like yours, which are much, much more dire than what you are seeing there. One thing that I love to see also is that you have the dashboard in Spanish as well, okay? That's the one that I decided to highlight here because it's wonderful that you're having that. So, what kind of sense can we make of those numbers? Well, according to this diagram or this, that I found about Mendocino County, and by the way, it was hard for me to find one to show that would capture in an easy way to understand. But basically, you have a population of your almost 90,000 or about 90,000 people in Mendocino County, about 24, 25, 26, depending on how you count them, are Latinos. So you have more than twice the proportion in the population of Latino cases, okay? So you are doing the right thing because that's one of the groups, certainly the group to focus your efforts on. By the way, this happened just a few minutes ago. And my CAO sent me this by text message, and I was able to put it here and to show you that, look at that. This is the essential workers that are being infected the most by COVID-19. Number one, farm workers. And you have farm workers there. And it's so important that you understand the dynamics that happen with farm workers. I wish to have more time to engage in discussions because I think that those dynamics, the attitudes, the behaviors, the beliefs, the lack of knowledge play a very important role of how this is playing out, okay? And these are things that are so important that you keep in mind because you are still in a unique opportunity to get ahead of the curve with this. This is in Fresno County. This is a hotspot map or geo map. And I'm showing this to you because most likely you are doing these geo maps already. But I think that this is so important to have data that you can see, because it tells you a story right away, of where the hotspots are and allows you for interventions, in many ways. Mobile units, testing is absolutely important to do. Do case identification, contact tracing, following them up. You are doing many of these things again. But I think that it would be helpful to have that kind of information. Then I want to share, resource, a paper that came up a week ago exactly. This is the CDC Preventing Chronic Disease. It is engaging with communities, lessons relearned from COVID-19, because we are relearning this. This is not new. There has been disparities with many of the outbreaks, previous outbreaks. So my good friend and colleague, Lloyd Michener, I like that he mentioned that we learned that in AIDS, SARS, and we are relearning as we respond to COVID-19, that the health equity begins with communities. We really have to work with you, on the ground, at the community level, to in order to make a dent to this pandemic. Very quickly, to let you know that I was very surprised this weekend. On Saturday, I was contacted by one of the NIH Institute leaders asking if I would be available to participate in this national forum that happened on Tuesday. Okay, national forum. And it was a COVID-19 community engagement forum. You know, I had been working with NIH for years, decades, actually. Have I seen something like this? Never, you know, because community engagement has been kind of an ugly duckling, okay, an afterthought. And if you see on top, you know, right here, you see meeting the needs of those most affected to address COVID-19, okay? And the keynote person is this, the director of NIH, Dr. Francis Collins, you know? And, you know, I have met Francis Collins before, Dr. Collins, you know, spoken with him. We don't speak that often, but I know who he is. He's a geneticist. He's a basic researcher. And there he was talking in very bold manner about the structural racism, about white privilege. I never have heard him speak in those terms before. What I saw was a humble man, you know, saying, we need you guys. We need you. We need the communities, those who are working on the ground. You know, can you help us deal with this? This is a friend also, Consuelo Wilkins, who presented this at that party on Tuesday. And she had these barriers to engaging communities in COVID-19 initiatives. I won't read this because we don't have time, but I hope, Roseanne, that they are gonna have access to the slides so they can look at them when you have a chance. But the direct barriers, you know, I know that you know this as already, ineffective communication about COVID-19, Spanish, in easy ways to understand, misinformation about COVID-19. Dr. Duhan did a fantastic job about that. With very good infographics that she presented. Also concerns about the safety, you already spoke about that. Limited access to the testing, which is absolutely necessary, important. I was heartened to hear that, there is an Abbott machine that was purchased and that is gonna be put in operation shortly. It's needed. Because otherwise, we would be, working in the, shooting in the dark. I should have used another metaphor. I don't want to be, shooting is not going well with me, let me tell you. But, you know, fears also, we need to know what the fears of these populations are related to testing. I have heard on many occasions talking with leaders of farm workers that there are farm workers that they prefer to go and work even though they know that they are feeling sick because they cannot afford losing a day's salary, okay? It is as simple as that. This is information that we need to consider because if we don't, we will continue to see these challenges. A stigma, Dr. George Verastagi mentioned that already, you know, etc. So what we can do? You know, just a few pointers. And I was very, very glad to see that Duhan. Dr. Duhan shared very specific information in a short period of time since the Board of Supervisors meeting that happened on Tuesday. And I don't have anything but praise for you, Roseanne, and for the other community members that came together in a very proactive manner And bravo to the board of supervisors, you know, and the health officials, because you are responding to this call in a community that is rightly concerned about doing something and be ahead of the problems before they can get worse. So what can you do? Engagement with communities at the local level early and throughout is critical. You already know that because you are doing it. Gather timely data on those affected. I was impressed with the information that Dr. Duhem presented already. Meaningful engagement, partnerships, and trust of communities. Engage communities as partners in addressing what matters to them. This is a time for people like me to listen, you know, not to impose our ideas, but to really listen to the experts on the ground. You know, I would consider as experts the farm workers, as you know, those who are being infected, those that we need in order to control, you know, what is happening on the ground. There is so much detail in these slides that I won't be able to read them. But case investigation, contact tracing is absolutely important, and you are still in really good time to do this in a serious manner. And in contact tracing, there are several pointers. Moving very fast is crucial. Thoroughness, accuracy is crucial. Persuasive communication that you are onto it. I'm impressed that you have a simultaneous interpretation in this Zoom session. You know, I have been in many Zoom sessions. This is the first time that I have been in a Zoom session in which I see the globe, you know, that you can touch. And then you have, you can select Spanish or English or other languages. So you are ahead of the game in several things. Isolation and you know, which is also very important. One thing that I want to emphasize here is that, you know, the last point, built on existing relationships, la confianza que existe, yeah, y poder trabajar sobre eso. To enhance case investigation, contact tracing. And I listed, Roseanne, all the partners that you listed on Tuesday, you know, and many of whom representatives that participated last Tuesday. Long-term implications, I think that it's about time that we reframe COVID-19 pandemic as a community problem, not a public health problem. It is more than that. And there are many reasons for that. To focus on outcomes, not on activities or processes, you know, and to look at reliable and actionable indicators. As Dr. Thomas Frieden, the ex-director of the CDC, you know, mentioned in a wonderful op-ed that he published, I think that in the Washington Post. And then the last point is COVID-19 is a paradigm case of an illness where social determinants of health play the leading role in the transmission and outcomes. You made a wonderful point, Dr. Verastegui, about that. I was so pleased that you brought that up because I think that is absolutely true. And what I want to also emphasize, one of my last points, is that it is about time that we go from just providing knowledge, you know, educating the population at the you know, general level, to move to beliefs, attitudes, changes in aspirations, and change in behavior. You know, that is one of the major challenges that we have. How do we change behavior? You know, it was Dr. Frieden in a tweet that I saw that he said, all we have to remember is the three W's, you know? Watch your distance, wear your mask, and wash your hands. Three W's. Simple to remember. And if we do that collectively, I'm totally convinced that we can control the incredible surge that we are seeing right now. This is the last one. We need to speak about mental health. the impact that this is causing on all of us, especially those who are, you know, much more that live in circumstances that are much more challenging. You know, those who have to go and work, they don't have any other choice, that they can be infected and be back and infect their wife or their husband, and certainly their children, their parents, you know, who are most likely in a vulnerable age like I am. And so this is I'm going to leave you with this. One thing that is certain about the current pandemic is that we are not doing enough to address its mental health effects. Usually, the damage a disaster does to mental health ends up costing more than the damage it does to physical health, because it lingers for years, you know? And I think that this is going to be the case. And the allocation of resources for this other crisis, and I would call it the mental health crisis, the resources are yet not there. So I'm going to stop here, and I want to thank all of you for this opportunity to share some thoughts, and also once again to applaud your efforts, because you are coming together as a community still with the numbers that you have, and that I'm convinced that you will be able to do quite a bit.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Aguilar Gaxiola, for your informative presentation. And now, do we have any questions from our participants?
I have one in English. What can be done to protect those who are undocumented and need healthcare or other services?
That's a wonderful question. And, you know, I think that all of us are blessed to be in California. And because I travel quite a bit because of the work that I do, and I think that California is at the forefront in the nation to recognize the value and you know, the contributions of undocumented workers. Those are essential workers. I already show you know, those who are being infected. And top of the list is the farm workers. A good proportion of farm workers are undocumented. And the governor announced a few days ago, actually a few weeks ago, that California is setting aside $125 million, $130 million, 80 of which are coming from the state of California, and 50 from foundations for undocumented. Okay, is that enough? I don't think so. That is enough, but at least there is. I can see that you know, statewide, and it varies by counties. But most of the counties that I mean, the greatest majority are being very responsive to that and trying to protect those workers again. Because I saw a proclamation a few weeks ago from the governor's office, you know, recognizing the incredible participation and contributions that farm workers and, you know, and including undocumented do for our society. We need to really have in mind that if it were not for the farm workers, you know, the fruit that I have right here in my kitchen, I'm about around the kitchen, I wouldn't have it, you know, or it would be much more costly. So I gave a talk yesterday about the DACA, the upholding the DACA program by the Supreme Court in June 18th specifically. And, you know, there are 200,000 of the 800 DACA students in the nation, 200,000 are here in California. And you know, there are 29,000 of the DACA program, you know, these are undocumented, who are frontline health workers, And 9,000 are here in California. And some of them have died because they care for the rest of the population. So I would say in Mendocino County, take care of them. You know, we should be taking care of them because they are having a role in our society with significant contributions.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one more in English, but if you want to take one in Spanish.
Erica and Angelica?
I don't see any in Spanish right now.
Okay. So the second question I have in English is, Doctor, what is your, in your opinion, would be the fastest way to equalize health disparities?
That's a great question. And I have, I have been tackling that one for decades, quite frankly. You know, I'm the director of the Center for Reducing Health Disparities, and I think about differences in access to care and differences in utilization of services. And we are working on the ground, actually, in Solano County right now, a five and a half year project, and we are 4 years into it. And we are working specifically with Latinos, Filipinos, and LGBTQ populations who had been historically underserved. And I would say that the fastest, and I love the question about the fastest, because I also have a sense of urgency with this. And as you can tell, I think that you can tell that I'm very passionate about these things, is that, you know, it's commitment. Is really to be committed and to have the political will and the personal will to do something about it. And there is so much that can be done. Okay, so I think that is, we have to come together in concerted efforts to make a difference.
Any other questions that have come through? I don't believe I saw any. Well, thank you so very much, Dr. Aguilar-Gaxiola, Dr. Noemi Duhan, Dr. Parker, and George Perastruji. Thank you so very much for today. I do want to mention, we have a few more minutes. There's the Healthy Mendocino website. I'm going to pull it up here for you. There's a document that is new on the page here that I wanted to direct our attendees to. It's the listening tour. It's a report out on what was heard. This is in relation to our community health needs assessment that's done every 3 years. You can find the report here at healthymendocino.org. But I'm bringing this up in particular because there is information here on interviews that were done with our Native American community regarding challenges, barriers, and recommendations on solutions, and then also for our Hispanic community and our coastal community. So I invite you to take a look at this informative document. And I thank all of you. I appreciate you participating today and standing by as we work through our first go here at doing a simultaneous English and Spanish Zoom presentation. So thank you so very much. Have a wonderful weekend.
Roseanne, somebody's asking, was it recorded? The majority was recorded. It was a little bit late, so we're going to ask Supervisor Haschek if he will record his portion and we'll add that back in. We'll also make sure we email out the slides to those of you who participated. Do know that there was one final question that I think it's just important to bring forth, which has to do with what benefits to support isolation, quarantine, testing, and treatment related to COVID-19, related conditions, can immigrants seek without triggering a public charge problem? I do know the county is addressing that need. They're partnering with the Community Foundation, actually, in order to get food to folks that are in isolation. But I don't know if Dr. Duhan or Angelica wants to say anything regarding the public charge problem.
Certainly the public charge is very concerning, but this has not come up
for us with any of the people that we provided free isolation quarantine housing to. It's not been anything we've reported to anybody. So I'm not sure how that would come into play.
Thank you for mentioning that as we end. And thank you to everybody for being with us. And if Supervisor Hashtag, if you'll stay on the line and help us and re-record your section, we'd really appreciate that. Bye, everybody. Thank you.